We talked about a lot of things, but yeah, there's a few tips in there for before, during, after, kind of losing your job, redundancy, kind of situation, and hopefully that was helpful. Hopefully it wasn't too personal, but yeah, I think
it was a good one. I like it. I missed our rambling chats with no guests, so hopefully people didn't get too bored on that.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, man. How was your swim?
It was good. I was just saying, because I'm not too busy at the moment, which is going to be the topic of that episode. I went for one of these Lido swim in London. And it was just me and a lot of retired people. Average age, 75. And me.
So technically, you are retired at the moment.
I am technically retired, forced retirement. Yeah, I'm doing a few. How do you call them? Like well-being, me time, type thing.
It's good.
It's good. Yeah. And you on the other side, are you busy? You're busy, right?
I am busy. Yeah, I am. I am busy in everything. In work, in life, in everything. But yeah, it's good, man. Yeah, we move. It's also the March is the Google Consent Mode V2 requirement.
I saw your post this morning. I was like, I have no fucking idea what that is. That's how disconnected I am.
Well, I think it's kind of snuck up on everybody. It's snuck up on me.
What is it? As well. It's a European thing for content or consent. Consent.
For consent. Yeah, exactly. So when you go to a website and you have the cookie burner, it should, if you like, choose which cookies you want, it needs to tell that to Google correctly through Tag Manager. And then Google can like still track those people, but in a cookie-less way.
That's crazy.
But yeah, it's just like a legislation thing. I mean, so many people have a cookie banner, and then you look at, you say like decline, and then you look in your browser settings and you see that like all of the cookies fired anyway, because like turning on the cookie banner doesn't also block the cookies. You have to set that up separately in GTM.
On that particular topic though, like we never spoke about this, but in Europe, including the UK, because obviously the UK is not technically Europe. It's mad. Like this, all like in 2024, the fact that we still have like something called cookies, whatever, like no one really understood in the public setting, understood what it was anyway. And we still have to, in every website you go to, there is an extra click to something that no one knows what it is. Mm-hmm. Also, like you said, doesn't even do what it says when you read it anyway. Mm-hmm. It's mad. Like, it's like, yeah.
I get the whole privacy thing, but it's made life way more annoying that every time, like you say, every website you go to, you have a fucking pop-up that comes up and you just got to click.
We don't need more of this. We don't need more of this. I think now in this day and age, like, people have given up their privacy. Even though there is a public debate about privacy, there's no, on the ground, at ground level, ground zero, no one cares.
No.
As long as what you're doing is what you wanted or interesting enough, or gives you the dopamine that you were looking for, no one cares about their privacy, you know? So like, I think we shouldn't have more. I think we should have less and just try and move the debate to something more interesting or that is...
Everyone's busy blocking cookies whilst they're scrolling TikTok and shopping on Temu.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can't have one and not the other.
The idea that... Like the joke that's been around for like many years now is that, you know, every time you mention something on your phone on Instagram, the ad shows up as being exactly what you spoke about. The most random thing, like, I don't know, like if you just had a kid and you talk about like a baby cream or whatever that is, or like that, something you never spoke about in your life because there's something new. Suddenly, as it just happened to show up. And that's just Instagram. Like TikTok is even worse, you know? It's so bad. You know what? Do you know what happened on my TikTok as well? Like recently, you know, my TikTok experience for the last few weeks, I've been quite like not at all on TikTok actually, and I've reconnected my account again. And if it, like I don't know if it looks like it's a new one to TikTok or something like that, but everything I'm being served on the For You page is like is so bad. It's so bad in a way that like. And I'm trying to figure out what I'm into, but the default, and obviously it's controlled by TikTok, which is controlled by, you know, the Chinese government, which I'm not too keen to talk about publicly in the podcast because we never know what can happen to individuals. But you know, like it's, they're really like pushing like some quite controversial content, like right wing stuff and like, you know, really bad like videos, like, well, yeah. I'm like, what is this? And like, it gets like a lot of tractions, etc. So like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's very powerful. It's very dangerous. And it's just, it makes a point that, yeah, you know, if we really cared about privacy, no one would be using TikTok in the first place.
Exactly. I mean, Google's going to go cookie-less this year. So, or maybe next year. So maybe at that point, there'll be no more discussions around fucking cookie banners and stuff because cookies will be phased out and we'll be onto something else. But recently I've got really into Facebook Marketplace. I literally had never bothered using it before. But I've bought so much. I've got so many bargains on there this last few weeks. The downside is up until that point, I never opened Facebook. The only reason I have a Facebook account is to log into Ads Manager, right? But when I go into Marketplace, I get recommended Facebook stories. And occasionally I've just like started scrolling through and oh, what the fuck are you doing? Can't watch stories and like yet another app. But all of the things that it suggests me, it's like those things where it's like, how quick is your pause button? And it'll be like, usually a girl like dancing around. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be like a millisecond of like a picture of her come up in like her underwear or something. And there's just millions. That's literally all it's given me is that shit. And probably because I like scrolled through my feed and I saw a few of them and I was like, oh, this is weird. Now all I'm seeing is that shit.
Yeah. That's so weird. That's so bad. Anyway, we can talk for... we haven't spoken for a while, so for everyone listening, that's why like we can go on. This week, we are not going to have a guest because something pretty important happened to me, and I think it's happening to a lot of people for the last couple of years. Especially because of the economy and what's happening in the tech world, etc. Talking about redundancies and you know what happens when you go through redundancy, the realities, what it can do to kind of like prepare for it, the before, during, and after. I think we can talk about a bit about that, and no one best to talk about this than this guy, me, because I just went through one. When was that? 3 weeks ago?
Really interesting because from my side, I obviously knew. We'd obviously spoken about that and I knew that was happening. But then initially there was the post about the new being acquired. And everyone's like, oh, amazing. Congrats, yo. Congrats, team. Like, this is great news. And all this. It's like you see two sides of it, right? Because everyone's like, oh, there's been like some kind of... like a buyout or something. Everyone's like, cool, everyone's gone rich and their shares have like gone to the moon and stuff. In reality, it's very rarely the case.
It's very rarely the case. As I would say, it's like never the case for 99.9% of employees in the UK over the last forever years that you would make enough money or any money at all to actually retire. At 26 or whatever, 30.
Man, don't pretend you're 26.
Yeah, I just added 10. I don't know why I said 26. If it sounded good, but no, yeah, I'm 36. The reality of exit events, so it could be an IPO or a failure, so bankruptcy or... so that's the very positive one, very negative one. And then in between, like an acquisition, a merger, an acquisition with another company. I don't want to give like precise numbers, but like outside of the founders, you know, there's going to be very little fallback to like other employees. I think like, and I don't know, even on like the best kind of like startup in the UK, like in finance, for example, like Monzo, Revolut, I think there was some article saying like, you know, the first 100 employees are going to become millionaires and stuff, you know, like that's one company. Like how many companies exist in the UK? That's like one company, 100 people, and it's probably before tax, you know, so they're probably going to lose like, if you were going to lucky enough to make a million, you'll make half a million, which is still great, but it's not. The
government makes half a million.
You're not gonna, you know, retire with that money and just live forever, and your children as well. And it's so few people that, yeah. Anyway, but in my case, it was an acquisition by another company. I'm not going to mention their names because I don't want to give free publicity.
No promo.
No promo. And yeah, I think purposefully what I did on LinkedIn, so what you saw on LinkedIn is like I purposefully did a two-part kind of announcement. First of all, the news. And I was deliberate for my part because I wanted the double engagement, like one for the one for the acquisition to get like a boost from that, for people to be like, oh yeah, that's cool, that's interesting. And then at the end, I think I finished it with like more news to come. And at that point, I think I literally just did that post the day I knew I was going to be made redundant. And let me start by saying also, because I didn't say it yet, it was really hard. It's always hard when you're being made redundant. It's always kind of a shock. Regardless of your seniority or how good your work was, it affects you like in your confidence straight away. But it's important to remind yourself that it's nothing to do with your performance. Like in most cases, I would say all of the cases, redundancies are made, whether it's through an acquisition or just like a business wanting to like realign their cost, etc., is going to be because they need to save money. And regardless of how good you are, if you're a part of the team that is easier to cut, you're going to be cut.
And also if you, when you're in a startup environment, for anybody that's worked in a startup environment, like that small, super close-knit team, you know, it's like high-performing sports team, family, however you want to call it. So the tightness that you feel, then you get acquired and you're being acquired by a company that also has that tightness. So the acquirer is going to be like, I'm tight with my team, so exactly. I need to get rid of this team I don't know and keep my team. So it's always going to be, I think it's very rare that the acquiring company like gets rid of some of their own members to replace it with some people that are already at the company.
Yeah, that would never happen really. And in my particular case, okay, so in the marketing team, like they already had a marketing team, they already had a CMO. So like, you know, it was pretty clear that I was gonna have to jump. So yeah, really hard. Always a check on the confidence. You never know it's gonna happen, and when it happens, the first reaction is like, no way. I was like, fuck that.
Anger.
I was like, it's anger, because if you've been working for, you know, it's even worse if you've been working for like 10 years somewhere, or 5 or 10 years. For me, it was like a bit more than 2 years, but it was like my baby, you know, like, especially when you're in a startup world and you started very early in the journey of the company, it's like you've seen it through like some like very early phases. And, in my case, like almost like it was pre-product market fit, you know, it was like very, very small numbers to, you know, having like case study made on like how fast we grew and like, you know, winning like a couple of awards and stuff. Like, it was good. So, yeah, it was a shock. But yeah, we move. So What can we talk about based on that? A few things. I think it's I think it goes back to like for me the important part is making sure that you are putting yourself in a position that when that happens, you potentially have options, or you have a network or a support mm-hmm. network at least of people that can help you at that point in time. And for when you're ready, so I'm still in the phase of enjoying myself and going for swims with retired people, but for when you're ready to be able to slash forced money financially, you can tap into this network and potential people that can help you find other opportunities, etc. But how do you do that? I think it starts from before. And I think anyone at any level in their career should have to like build their personal brand or whatever you want to call mm-hmm. it. Just call it reputation. Some people really cringe at personal brand stuff and cringe on like posting on LinkedIn and stuff. But call it reputation, if you will. So build your reputation early enough so that when you're in the market looking for another opportunity, people know about you and know what you've done. And the simple way to do that for anyone really is at least posting once a week on LinkedIn and talk about the stuff that you do. And talk about
even
it
if they don't know you, it's just like you, if you apply for a role, people visit your profile. If there's 100 people that applied and 10 of them post interesting content, then those 10 people are going to stand out.
Exactly. Start posting about what you do, the achievements that you have, like the interesting, whatever that is, whatever is shareable, because you know, obviously not everything is shareable within a company, but things that are like easy to talk about, like some wins, some public wins, some announcements, but not just when you're recruiting someone. Like some people post on LinkedIn just when they are about to recruit someone, and it's like the post gets like 2 likes and you know no one sees it. So I think that's like that's my number one tip really to like prepare for redundancies. Like make sure that you have prepared for that moment ahead of time, because you never know when it's gonna hit. The best way to do that is through LinkedIn. And as you know, I've been doing that for like many years at this point, a bit more consistently over the last year and a half. But I started doing that, was it at Deliveroo or more at Depop? I don't know. At least 5 years ago, maybe more, between 5 and 7 years ago to do that. And I think I told that story before, but like, When I was at Depop, if you search for Depop on LinkedIn at the time, and Depop was already like pretty out there in the press and getting a lot of traction, growing really fast. Like we opened in the US, we opened in Australia and stuff. Like there was like a lot of like big things happening in the secondhand, like circular economy theme. That was like the number one thing that would show up on the number one employee showing up on LinkedIn above the founder, above the CEO, above everyone else, because I had like the number one post. Like I had posts with like 400 or 500 likes. And sometimes it was just like me talking about an article that was, I was not like making shit up. It was literally just like taking an article that was posted about Depop, my 2 cents on it, you know, like this is cool. I like it because it's like, it relates to like something that I believe or something that I was doing when I was a teenager, whatever, you know. And that worked really, really well. Like I started getting like a lot of attention while being at work from like a lot of other people from that time. So I think it's it also really helps when you work for a company that has traction. Obviously that helps too with a lot of you know, a tailwind in its space. It's a bit harder. It's true that it's a bit harder. For example, at Nude, it was not as easy to get tractions on things when you're like talk about a super niche audience and the company's also just started. I mean, it's easier for me to stand out, obviously, because I already built that reputation from years before, but the actual audience is a bit smaller because you're not as well known as a company. But yeah, so that's my pre, it happens, like the things that you can do. What do you think of that? Can you think of other things?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Other things?
I think it's sensible. You need a way to stand out. I mean, all you got to do is go to the jobs tab on LinkedIn and just look at whatever is in front of you and see that everything has got like 100 plus applicants. So anything you can do, like I just said, to make you stand out is going to be beneficial to that. I think also the jobs market right now, I don't know, but as an outsider looking in, it's tough. You know, if you went back to this time like 5 or 6 years ago, there'd be tons of little roles, but at small startups and companies, but they've just like buckled down. They're not spending anymore. Or the salaries are a lot, you know, in some cases like 50% lower from what I've seen in the market now where it was like 5 or 6 years ago. So it's a hard place. I think one thing that you probably could do is like prepare yourself to look for things that aren't necessarily just full-time roles. So that, again, that's where having a network comes in easy. If you can like hustle that network and you can get a few little side gigs that are paying you enough in a month to like cover your mortgage or your rent or whatever, then that's going to make life a bit easier for you. And then also, you know, I know people who, like, it's not good, but when you go and you have maternity leave and you come back and you've been out on the market for like, let's say 2 years, they shouldn't, but people are like look negatively at that, especially in this fast moving world that, you know, we work in. And I've told a few friends who have done that, like, just say that you've been like freelancing or consulting for that period. Like, even you can say that you were on mat leave, but also you were doing some freelancing work, because I think people just now, it's like, oh, this guy's been out of work for 2 months. Yeah, I don't know. Let's like move on to somebody else. So I think if you can fill that gap with other stuff that you've been doing, I think that's beneficial. But it's easier said than done. All of this stuff's easier said than done. If you're made redundant tomorrow, you don't have a network and you can't find a side gig, it's still going to be fucking hard.
Yeah. But there's level to this game, because that's a great number two. Number one was building your reputation, talk about what you do. Number two would be what you just said, like try and have a diversified string of income. Not just your 9 to 5, but maybe an extra thing or an extra couple of things that are could be relating to what you do on your 9 to 5, or could be completely different. Like, you could have, like, I don't know, an Etsy store, and you make, I don't know, wooden objects, whatever it is, some crafty things. You knit, you know, you could be like making jumpers or beanies, you know, and at least. If you can, you won't fully replace your 9 to 5 income, but when you potentially lose your job, you'll have a little side thing to keep you going a little bit longer until you find that job. And what I was saying, like, there's level to this game. Like, if you're fairly junior in your career, you can still. There's like a million things. I mean, literally, like, if you look on TikTok or on YouTube, there's like a million kids talking to you about how can you make money online. But there is
how I grew my 7-figure agency at the age of like 21.
Besides the ones that are, you know, completely killing it. Like, there's some like easier things, you know, like I said, like a Etsy store. You could have like a TikTok account if you're more into creating content. We spoke about this multiple times, but on TikTok, there's more and more of a trend in going into for very like micro creators. Like, you don't need a big audience. You just need to know how to create content and show that you, that you're good at that stuff. You could set up a little side business. You could, go through like the affiliate kind of route. You could go writing as well, writing blogs, writing content for other brands. Like everything that I'm talking about is mostly like marketing related because that's our field. But there are ways to have like a little side income, regardless of your level. Like you could be fairly junior or mid-level. It's the difference is like you're just going to be cheaper for the people hiring you. So there is leverage there. And then if you look at, for example, on my LinkedIn over the last 2-3 years, I've added quite a few like advisory role. When you get to like more senior position, it's more like strategic level stuff. But that's also another way to be in touch with your network, increase your network, but also get maybe some side incomes from advisory consulting kind of work as well. That's a good number two, to prepare for.
And I think you need to, like, all that stuff sounds great, but you're not going to like set up an affiliate store and start making money tomorrow. So you need to lay the foundations now. Like, when, if you're listening to this, just think that, you know, it sounds unrealistic to say there's ways to make money outside of your job easily online, but it isn't. And if you just start doing something now, you can turn it into something. I know loads of people who supplement their income with something that they barely do any work, or they take a couple of calls in the evenings, and it's, or you could just go and, I've got a friend who's, he wants to do something totally different. So he wants to go and retrain as a tiler, a kitchen tiler or a bathroom tiler. And he's going to do his job, but he's going to pick up, like, I just paid a guy like 600 quid to tile my fucking bathroom floor. It's like, if I can just earn that in a day, it's fine. Earn that on a Saturday, Sunday. So there's this stuff. Everyone needs trades. Not enough people learn trades these days. So, you know, it's constantly paying someone to do something in your house that you like.
Yeah.
I should learn how to do that.
Definitely. For me, it's more like garden stuff. Or gardeners making a killing. But I just don't have time. It's also then the trade-off is like, how much do you earn? You know, is it better to pay someone and get your time back to do more work? That sometimes it comes to that. But no, I agree. And I think this topic is very important at the moment because we know last year has been like, God knows how many people being laid off from big tech companies. I think it's just the beginning, to be honest. There's many, like, for example, Google is about to, I think, go through or just went through like some redundancy as well. A lot of these companies over the last 10, 15 years, they became like so inflated. And like, I think the reality is like, we're not going back to what it was anytime soon. Maybe in our lifetime. Maybe it'll be like for our kids. It'll be back to like a kind of boom, free money, zero interest rate kind of era. But for us, feels like it's going to settle kind of the way it is. So that's why it's very important to prepare because I think it's just the beginning. Maybe it sounds pessimistic, but I'm usually very positive. So maybe it's like just my realistic, not pessimistic view on things. And also like on the, I know it's like completely off topic to this podcast, but like on the trades thing, doing like some manual work, I totally agree. I think like knowing what we know about marketing now, if I knew how to like, I don't know, yeah, like put ties on the roof or in the bathroom or I don't know, like, I mean, I think I'll make a killing.
Be number one Google for everything.
Plus, they all just take cash, man. That's just clever, you know, like, type of discussion. But yeah, no, it's crazy. It's crazy. We're talking about thousands of pounds, like, spent for like, you know, 2-3 days work. And
Man. So, there's people looking for everything, you know, it's like, there's people looking to pay someone to set up their Sonos. There's people looking to pay someone to set up their smart home and their Hue lights and stuff. You know, if you put your marketing skills to use, start creating content about that stuff and localize to your area and, you know, get some leads coming in. Growing on trees.
The reason why we're talking about this, because literally, when was it, this morning or yesterday, you sent me the picture of you laid out some carpet on your stairs and you send me a photo saying like you might go full time doing that. You look good, man. You did some good job.
Yeah, man. I was pretty pleased with
that. How do you call that in English, when you do the
carpet fitting
on stairs? Yeah, nice. So yeah, it's not totally random discussion. It comes from somewhere. No, Jake has been fitting some carpet by himself. So yeah, that's congrats to you.
Well you done. Can learn how to do anything on YouTube.
What else did I want to add? I think part of the preparation as well for, you know, whether something happened or not in your job, I think being able to learning the skill to network is very important in any time in your career. And I think that's something that I've learned through posting content on LinkedIn for many years and just getting a lot of DMs. I forced myself, and I think I told you this like a few times over the last few years, but like I reply to everybody, even if it's like one word or like two words, like I don't ignore messages. I've gotten, I think, the last four jobs and all the advisory role through networking, through like I never applied to a job. Mm-hmm. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But like I'm forcing myself to apply to jobs now because I don't want to lose that skill completely. But to go back to networking, I think forcing yourself to reply to people who contact you, even if it's to say no, because also saying no is very important. But making time to like have coffees, meet new people, it's very hard to do at the beginning. It wasn't very easy for me. But I think it's very important because, you know, I think it's a small world and you never know who people know and how you can help them, first of all, and then how they can help you in return. So yeah, I think like forcing yourself to like go outside your bubble and go for breakfast or coffees, or even if it's like just online, if you can't meet someone in for real, that's also why we do this podcast. You know, like half of the guests that we got on the podcast, we'd never talked to before. Maybe like a few messages on LinkedIn, maybe sometimes, but we literally start talking to them as they come on the podcast and then we have a discussion. And it's amazing. It's great because these people now know us, we know them, and you never know, might be like opening doors that you don't know existed in the future, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think you do that offline bit really well. You know, a lot of people think networking is just like connect on LinkedIn, send a message, but you know, getting that FaceTime in with people in real life, and I know you're going for coffees and lunch and breakfast with people all the time, is a good skill to have if you live easily commutable distance. The problem for me is someone's like, oh, let's get a coffee tomorrow. I'm like, oh, it's gonna cost me like £65 to get a coffee with you.
Yeah, but we had that chat, like that's one of the reason, not the main reason, but it's definitely one of the reason why I really want to stay in London, like being able to go, like for me that's very, very important.
If anyone wants to get a coffee in Colchester, hit me up.
Yeah, anyone in Colchester, there's amazing coffee there.
I wouldn't say that, but it's the UK's first town, you know, or UK's oldest town. So,
is it nice?
There's some shit here. There's some old stuff here.
and it goes both ways. I think you know, networking is not about like take or asking for stuff, you know, all the time. It's that's why I reply to every messages, because as much as possible when I can help, I'll help people for free, at least to begin with. When it goes too deep into the questions, like, you know, what would be your strategy for this, I'm like, wait, maybe we should make this official. But at least at the beginning, like giving as much as possible to your network, to people reaching out to you, is like, you know, whatever you want to call it, like karma or, you know, reputation, whatever it is. Like, I think it does something over time when you consistently do it. It snowballs.
I agree. I think every advisory or consulting or freelance gig I've ever had, bar a few, were all, you're working with someone already, they recommend you or they they're just people talk, right? I've had people that I haven't worked with, but they've just mentioned me to someone else, and they're like, hey, this person recommended you. So once you start doing, and that doesn't happen when you're in a full-time job, you know, no one's recommending you because you're, you know, you don't recommend someone who's doing something full-time, really.
Yeah.
So get the ball. I mean, not that it can't be, but people need to know that you're doing stuff. Maybe you're open for a side hustle or something. And yeah. Once that ball's rolling, then it does, the leads do come.
Yeah. If you do a good job. Exactly. So one thing I wanted to touch on as well, which I've been doing, which I think is very helpful, because when you do go through redundancy, it can be brutal. In my case, it was very impersonal as well. Like the way I think work up until that point can be very, you know, nice and, you know, still challenging, but like human and etc. But then when you fall into that process of like redundancy, suddenly it's like, it feels like you really feels like you're talking to a business and there's no humans anymore. And that I think that is the bit that affects you, or at least affected me the most, is like for a few days, it's really hard to think straight. So what I've been doing from almost immediately, but give or take a few days, I opened a new note on my phone, and every discussion I was having with people who either heard that I was available or wanted to help, I wrote it down, because I think in my mind, at least, I was not focused. I was like focused too much on like, this just happened. What am I going to do? You've got this like, feeling that you're, you know, not good at your job anymore, that you're not going to find the next thing, that scarcity thing, like, oh, there's nothing out there for me, because it just happened. Yeah. So everything is very fresh. So I kept that note and now it's been a few weeks. I've got like 15 things in there, like individual like items of like either like a contact I need to go back to, someone who said they potentially have a role. And it's like all over the place. Nothing's concrete. It's a lot of ifs, but because I've wrote the notes down, it helps me when I have like a moment, like a couple of minutes, I'm like, oh, you know, I don't have anything yet. I've got this list, and I know where things are.
Like having a personal CRM. I mean, you can make it, and there's like, you can pay for those things, or you can make it in Notion. Because really, when you're networking with people, you need to be following up with people.
Yeah.
You know, you chat with somebody and 6 months later, you need to remind yourself to follow up with them and just get treated like you're generating leads for your business, right? You get the leads in and then you need to keep them warm.
Exactly. You're the business, and you need to treat yourself like you're the business, and you need to go back into selling yourself a little bit as well. So that's the other thing that I found. Like I said, it's not all opportunity led from people that I already know or that know me. I've also looked through, you know, the job market, which is, I agree, very thin right now for like interesting stuff. But I did apply to a few roles the old school way, which, you know, I don't know what I think of it, but, you know, having to go to 10 forms, upload a CV and upload a cover letter is...
And spend 3 days making a presentation on a fucking go-to-market strategy for free.
That's another thing. So that was a task, right? I'm not there yet. But like some of these roles, they're like, it's like more traditional corporate companies. And like, it does make me question, especially in the type of roles, like in marketing, I do feel like having to go through, if you're a creative person, like I think I am, having to go through a very dry, rigid process and a cover letter. And I know it comes from my privilege. I've got like a very privileged position. Like most people have to do that. So I understand. That's the thing, but it does feel very old school as as a process. It must be another way. I don't have a solution for that, but it does feel like when you go through it, it's like, damn, this is really not exciting me at all. Besides the logo of the company, I'm like, I can already feel the role is going to be, you know, maybe annoying. So I'm waiting them to, like, if they contact me, I'm like, you need to win me now, because, you know, like, this is, I'm already gone. I've applied, but I'm gone, you know, like.
Yeah. Especially when you're at that level, the list of things that you need to be able to do is just ridiculous. Like, not ridiculous in that it's difficult. It's just like random disjointed things that, you know, that role doesn't require, but you're being screened. Like you posted about this the other day, actually, or you mentioned it to me the other day.
Yeah.
You know, you're being screened by a recruiter who has no idea most of the time, like, what any of this stuff means. It's like, oh, he hasn't used these three acronyms, or he hasn't used this word, so he obviously doesn't know about that. And it's super difficult.
I'll tell you one that I almost as soon as I got my redundant, I got three different people. Actually, one of them we had on the podcast, I won't mention names, but came to me saying, like, there's this role, this is you, like, this is for you. So, like, you know, like, very high praise from these people. And it was for Soraya in France. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it was because I'm pretty sure they're never going to contact me because of the process, but I heard about the role through my network. Actually, two of them told their recruiter, like, you need to talk to Johan because he's available now, and this role is for him. It's basically to run their marketing. It's kind of thing is head of marketing, but it's kind of their CMO reporting straight to the founder. Don't get me wrong, like, I love that role. I actually spoke to a recruiter about that role. It's been 2 weeks. I had no feedback. Like, how crazy that is, that I'm not even going to get the chance to have one chat with actually someone who works there. It was like a remote kind of recruiting thing. But I think that is just telling me, like, I don't have the right network to be in those discussions. Maybe because it's in France and I've been in the UK for so long. Mm. They did tell me they were looking for someone living in France. But it's just like an example of, like, how crazy sometimes looking for a role is, you know, because I was like, damn, they hyped me up, you know, I was like, yeah, this is it. Like, I could do that. And the truth is, I don't know how to say this, but, you know, sometimes you see a role and you see a company and you see the fit and you're like, I know in my, like,
bones.
DNA, my bones, that's the excerpt. I know in my bones, like, I will smash it. Like, I know I'll smash that role. But, like I said, I'm probably never going to hear from them. Weirdly, you know?
That recruiting company would be like, oh, he didn't mention CRM on his profile, so.
It was weird. So, anyway.
I know somebody, that's a bit, friend of mine recently went through a long process. I think it was started with, like, two interviews, then a live task. Which sounded like fucking brutal. Like, here's like four people watching your screen. Here's a load of data. Like, answer these questions from it. Like, really complex stuff. He sent it to me and I was like, I'd have just left the call.
Sorry, my kids are crying.
Yeah, exactly. And they tell you, and he did that and he did a good job. And then he had the final stage. It was down to two of them. He had the final stage call with the CEO. Went really well. And then he got an email saying, oh, we've decided that we're not going to hire either of the two candidates. We're going to go back to the beginning. It's like, that's what a waste of everybody's time, because there must have always been doubts of that. You if it's not right in your gut in that first meeting, you cannot progress people through to just waste their time like that.
Yeah. It happens a lot. It happens. So there's a very fine line between asking for someone to do some work and genuinely screening their skills.
It's like the BrewDog example, right, where they asked for a go-to-market strategy and then they basically didn't hire that person but started using the strategy. I think she ended up suing them for that.
Wow, I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised. Great. I was trying to think if there was something else. Well, I guess we can conclude on where things are now. I mentioned I have a list of things on my phone that I've maintained. So there's not nothing. And I think to tie back to the episode from last week or the last episode with Shen, it's interesting now to me now every time I'm in between jobs, the internal discussion I have with myself between this time is the time I'm fully going freelance, fractional and advisory, or go back full time. And I'm really torn. I really like both. And I really don't know. You know what? I even got a couple of people contacted me to kind of be a co-founder as well.
That's
so
cool.
There's that on the cards too. But obviously, the higher you go in your career and the more secure you get financially, the more it filters opportunity based on that. So I do need to take that into consideration too, especially when you have a mortgage and two kids.
Yeah. Sadly, your life evolves to the money that you're bringing in. So as much as it will be nice to change direction and take a step back, it becomes a point where it's impossible to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, something you said earlier was interesting when we're talking about manual jobs and like doing something completely different. There's a few of these like that. When I really think about it, I'm like, I'd love to, never done bartending. Love to do like some bartending sometimes, maybe when I'm older, when I have time, when the kids are older. And you know, I love tattoos. I think working somehow near a tattoo or inside a tattoo shop.
A guinea pig for the artist to experiment on.
Or a tattoo artist. Maybe I'll become a tattoo artist. I've got, you know, like some, I would have the most random style because my drawings is skills not good. But maybe it's like, it will be like a new style that people like. But yeah, like things like that that, you know, not anytime soon, but yeah. If money was no object, what would you do? You know, yeah,
exactly. That's the benefit of being fractional, or like as Rosie Pogba, for instance, posted about this the other day about like what her average week looks like, and she can build a week around her life, which is you can do if you're not full time. So she had days when she's just like personal days, whatever. And you can go and be a bartender or a barista. Sometimes I'm like, I would love to just, my job is turn on the coffee machine and I just mindlessly make coffees all day. And I don't have to think about anything strategic or fucking building a deck or having a meeting or having a call or making some ad perform better than it was. And you could do that, right? If you built your salary around, like, I'm going to go and get a £22,000 paying job at Costa doing weekend making coffees, then you just need a few little side hustles and you can do that.
Yeah. Damn, we're being very real right now. Another one, basketball coach. I'd love to coach like kids
basketball coach.
Kids basketball. That's another thing. And there's definitely a lack of kids basketball team in London. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Way too many football teams. But
yeah, definitely.
Just a few basketball teams. So, yeah, maybe that.
Yeah, you need to start. That sounds like a movie. French guy moves to London, starts a kids basketball team, takes it to the top of the NBA.
My two kids become like 7 foot.
We'll wrap it up, right? What's the perfect role that someone might have for you?
Yeah, if someone listening as a lead, because that's the other thing, we're using this episode as a way to potentially get myself more ideas. What's the perfect role? I think anything cool. I don't know how to summarize it. Like definitely a company that would be like in the early stage of its journey, ideally post product market fit. and looking for their first like senior marketing lead to like get things to the next level, to like their Series A or Series B. I think like that's the kind of groundwork. And then I've been thinking about industries a lot. I really don't have a favorite industry. Like, as long as it's disruptive, cool idea, that the product is nice, you know, that's how I go by when I, especially for a full-time role, you know, like if I don't believe in a product or I wouldn't use it and I'm supposed to be the target audience or close to it, then that's a no.
It's not a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to try and like, we're not magicians, right? Like,
can't polish your head.
I wasn't gonna say this, but yeah, that's the expression. But yeah, that would be the role. I hope it was not too vague. But yeah, I'm keeping things open so like people don't feel like scared to reach out for things. If there is nothing full time that is exciting enough for me, I'll probably go part time fractional. Another little roster like I did 2 years ago with like 3-4 companies and fill my time like that. That's the other way. I don't think I'll go co-founder unless it's with you. Oh.
You're already a co-founder of a podcast.
We're already co-founding, yeah. But yeah, that's it. That's a wrap.
Like this episode, share it, leave us a review in the App Store, tag Yo in any jobs that you find, share this episode with your network so those jobs can find him. There you go. And he has already said that he'll give 25% of his first year salary to find him.
That's a
especially
good way
if it's in the bar.
I'll give you, especially if it's in the bar, I'll give you In Growth We Trust hat.
We've had a lot of interest. I've had a lot of people asking me how they can get hold of them, so we need to think up how.
Yeah, definitely. All right.
Peace.